first just kind of give you an overview of what Friends Development Fund is. And one of the things that happened in this past year is my father-in-law passed away, and as we were going through some of the information about what he had done, he was one of the people that, along with Chuck Nichols and Ron Settle and several others, who had the vision to establish an endowment fund that would support some of the ministries of Iowa Yearly Meeting for the long term. And so it was, and that was done, I think, back in the 1970s. So it's been going on quite a while. Took a while to get going, but now we have funds of a little over $1.3 million invested, and those funds then go to be used for supporting various ministries of Iowa Yearly Meeting. One of the things that we want to do is just make you aware that that's a possibility, and different people have different financial abilities to give. And if you're a person who or knows people who want to do something for the church for the long term, this is the way to do it. It can be done through estate giving or gifts. One of the things that was done several years ago was life insurance policies. People would buy a life insurance policy and then just make it so that instead of going to their family or whatever, the yearly meeting was a beneficiary. And so you paid a little monthly fee, and at the end of the time, it might end up with quite a bit as a donation. There's just a lot of different ways, and Lyle is really good about telling us some of those opportunities. But first, I just want you to have an idea. You probably see the, you'll see this, and John Good will go over it again. It's the Treasury's report from Friends Development Fund. And I know not everyone has their eyes light up when they see a Treasury's report like John and I do. Some of you, for some reason, your eyes kind of glaze over and you just kind of go into not sure what's going on here. But I just want to read real briefly through it and let you know some of the ministries that are supported. And the Yearly Meeting Park gets a little bit of money. William Penn University has some. The campus ministry at William Penn, about $340 last year. There's a Smith Scholarship, which is a scholarship that the trustees administer, and that goes to Friends students. We've had a couple of churches invest money with us. Marshalltown Friends has, as well as the Oskaloosa Friends Cemetery. And then one of the biggest ones is Church Extension is supported, and a lot of their budget comes from the money that comes out of Friends Development Fund. Last year it was $23,411 that comes from, you know, that's an ongoing thing that can come every year because people have donated to support Church Extension over the period of time. So we have a budget to work with for Davenport, for Minneapolis Friends, all of those different things, International Friends. There's a pastoral leadership amount, $2,300 there, and the scholarship from the Kenneth and the Palmer Scholarship, that's in the process of developing. Missions Board gets some of its designated, but there's $4,400 that comes every year for missions to use to support some of the different ministries. And another one that has been a concern and an interest over the years is developing support for retired ministers and missionaries. And people that have been a part of Iowa Yearly Meeting for many years and then retire. And that now is about a little over $10,000 a year that goes to help. Primarily, I think it's used to help supplement health insurance, but whatever it needs. Quaker Heights has... there's money invested there for Quaker Heights. Some of that now is a relatively new fund that is used to support some of the costs when you go to camp, you have counselors, but they need to eat. There's costs for the facilities. And so in order to support that, supplement that, some people have started to fund, and there's a couple thousand dollars that goes towards that, as well as another $4,000 that goes towards the camp. So those are just some of the ministries that are supported now by Camp Quaker Heights. I mean, by the Friends Development Fund, Camp Quaker Heights is just one of those. And if you have a particular concern for that or any of those ministries, or if you have a large enough amount of money, we'll allow you to set up a new line item that we could do for a different ministry. We do have some restrictions on that because we just don't want it to be too small. But if you've had an interest in Iowa Yearly Meeting over the years and you'd like to see some of these funds supported going forward. We'd encourage you to talk with us, and Everence is really good to work with anyone on estate planning. All the different possibilities, there's just a lot of different ways that you can do things that would be beneficial to you. And so that's how the money that Friends Development Fund has is used. Where our job is as Friends Development Fund is basically to help encourage people to give money to Friends Development Fund so that these ministries can be supported, and then administer that and see that it gets taken care of and that those funds get delivered where they're supposed to be delivered. Anybody have any particular questions about just like kind of what we do? If not, what I'd like to do is give the microphone now to Lyle Miller. And one of the concerns that we have as Friends Development Fund is recognizing that teaching people about stewardship is important, and that's one of the things we'd like to be about. Also making people aware of different possibilities that come up for ways that you can give that you might not have thought of that would be helpful. And so I'll just kind of let Lyle share a few of those, and if you have some questions as you go along, go ahead and interrupt him, or at the end we can have additional questions. So, Lyle, thank you.
Thanks, Lloyd. Several things, just as sort of opening comments that I'll say about Friends Development Fund. One is I very much affirm you for having had the foresight. I didn't realize it was going on, you know, as early as the 70s. Everence has been involved for, I don't know, 15 years or so probably. But having the foresight to establish this kind of a fund is very wise. Secondly, I think it also makes a ton of sense for the way that you have done this by having one endowment fund that serves the entire yearly meeting, and I think that's wise on a couple of counts as well. One is it avoids each congregation. You know, one of the things that I do regularly is meet with congregations about establishing their own endowment fund. By doing it as a yearly meeting, you've kind of skipped that piece, and you don't have to worry about each congregation doing their own thing. There's also efficiencies that are gained by that, by being able to pool the investments across the yearly meeting. And that's one of the particular ways that we do interact is by having the opportunity to manage this money on your behalf. And for that, obviously, we're very, very thankful for the opportunity to do that. One of the things that we've been talking about as the when we had a Zoom call a week or so ago was talking about how do we do the kinds of education activities that may be supported that might be helpful in supporting Friends Development Fund, because there are really a lot of different ways that a person can give. And sometimes we hear the term endowment and all we think about is, well, I'm going to, you know, that really only makes sense if I've got $1 billion to leave in my will at the end of my lifetime. But there are really all kinds of different ways to give. I find it helpful to think of it to think of the different types of tools, the types of strategies, sort of put them into three different buckets, if you will. There are the kinds of gifts that can help you now, and I'm talking here about primarily about tax advantages for giving. There are the kinds of gifts that can help you now. There are the kinds of gifts that can be beneficial down the road. There are also the kinds of gifts that can provide a stream of income over the course of your lifetime. And that's a lot of what Kent Blossom, the advisor in our Kelowna office, who I will say somehow chose going to Italy over coming to Oskaloosa this week. He's on vacation, so he apologizes for not being able to be here. But anyway, a lot of what we do is have conversations with people and talk about, you know, what are the passions? What are the missions, the ministries, the organizations that you care deeply about? And how can we help you align your finances with your faith to give you the confidence to feel empowered to give to these ministries, like Friends Development Fund, like the different line items that are here? under that. Now, we recognize, again, that the primary reason that we give is not because of the tax advantages, et cetera. The primary reason we give is because we care about the organization. The tax advantages are ways that we can use particular strategies often to be able to give more than we thought we might be able to otherwise. So a couple of them that I'll just highlight very quickly. One, in the area of the kinds of gifts that help now. One of the particular strategies that is available for folks who are over the age of 70 and a half, for example, is to consider making what's called a qualified charitable distribution. Okay, when you're 70 and a half and you have a traditional IRA, what happens? You got to take money out. The government has not received, you didn't pay taxes on this money when it went in. You didn't pay taxes as it grew. And so eventually they want their tax money. And so at 70 and a half, and I don't know why they picked that half, they start requiring that you take money out of that. And you have to pay taxes on that at that point. Well, a great way to give to whatever organization you're giving to, if you're over the age of 70 and a half and have a traditional IRA, is to make these qualified charitable distributions, because you can have the money gifted directly to the organization and you don't receive that as income, okay? And so you don't pay taxes on it. I like to describe that as having the best of all three worlds. You didn't pay taxes going in, you didn't pay taxes as it grows, and you don't pay taxes when it goes out. One question that often comes up in that is people say, well, I have a 401k, I don't have an IRA, can I still do that? You can't do it directly from a 401k. What you can do, however, is roll over your 401k into an IRA, which is a non-taxable event, and then do your giving from that IRA. And so that's something that, frankly, you should be talking about in your congregations, because anybody over the age of 70 and a half, if they have a traditional IRA, that ought to be the first place that they are looking to be generous from. Okay, and again, that those are the kinds of conversations that Kent or I can have with you. If moving money over to an IRA is something you want to do, that's something Kent can work with you on. Another real key one in our congregations where there are often farmers is helping people recognize that for farmers, giving corn and soybeans is often is the other of the two, the qualified charitable distributions, and farmers giving commodities are the two best immediate giving strategies, frankly, that are available to people. So if there are farmers in your congregation, they ought to learn how to gift farm commodities. And we can help, we can help do that. Many people do it directly to their church. One of the real advantages of using us to do that is it just sort of simplifies the process in terms of flexibility, because you can make one gift to the Everence Foundation and then make distribution requests to all these different organizations, including Friends Development Fund. And I highlight a couple of those because, like I said earlier, often we think it's just about making gifts at the end of life. But those are a couple of ways that you can support Friends Development Fund, even in the course of your lifetime. Some of the gifts that we talk about in gifts that help later, The most straightforward one is simply including Friends Development Fund in your estate gift. The reality is there's all kinds of planned gifts, tools, and strategies that I can talk about, but about 80% of people's planned gifts happen in the form of including charity in their will. And again, you can do that by either identifying directly that you want to give to Friends Development Fund. Another way that people often use the Everence Foundation is by making their gift to the foundation and then saying, out of that, I'd like to have 25% given to Friends Development Fund, an amount given to my local congregation directly, an amount given to William Penn, whatever the organizations are that you care about. There's also strategies like Lloyd talked about, such as life insurance, where you can purchase life insurance, identify the charity as the beneficiary of your life insurance. There's also ways that you can actually make the charity the holder, the owner of the life insurance policy, and then in actually gifting the money to, and again, I'll use Everence Foundation language because that's what I'm familiar with, gifting the money to the Everence Conference Foundation that pays the premium on that, that contribution can actually be considered tax deductible. So that's another strategy that can be used. A couple of the key strategies in terms of that giving, that gift that gives back over time, two tools. One of them is called a charitable gift annuity, and the other is called a charitable remainder unit trust. They're similar in many ways in that you make a gift up front. There can be a tax benefit for you then. It provides you a stream of income over the course of your lifetime, and then at the point that you pass away, whatever is left in that investment tool that's in part investment, part gift, whatever's left there goes to whatever charities that you have identified. In the case of gift annuities, they are wonderful because they will provide you a guaranteed stream of income for the rest of your life. And they're especially advantageous if you're somebody that has money in a gift, in a CD, for example, and you're getting, you know, 0.5% or 1% or whatever, you know, CD rates are, because the interest rates are typically significantly higher. I don't have the chart with me. But, you know, for a person around age 65, I think I have in my head it's like 5.5%, and it kind of works its way up until when you're in your early 90s, it can be as much as 9%. You know, and that's a guaranteed stream of income for as long as you live. If you're married, it can be until the second person passes away. So that can be a great tool there. Charitable trusts are similar in that they provide a stream of income. You can add additional amounts to them. So you get to identify what is the interest rate that you want to receive from that income. And it has to be, it's required by law to be at least 5%. But it can be significantly higher than that. And then, again, the money would be invested on your behalf because the interest rate you get to choose, obviously, if you think of it as a teeter-totter, if you choose a higher interest rate, there will be less left for charity at the end, and vice versa. If you choose the lower 5% interest rate, there will be more left for charity at the very end. So that's really, at a very high level, some of the tools that are out there that can be used. One of the things that we've talked about with the Friends Development Fund group is that we want to be a little more intentional about offering some workshops within Iowa Yearly Meeting in locations, and perhaps very possibly a lot of them happening electronically, so that folks can log on, take part in a webinar where we walk through some of these different tools in a little bit more detail. There are folks, I know that there are folks within Iowa Yearly Meeting that are using some of these tools and strategies, and have found them very, very helpful there. I'll pause there. Do folks have questions? Anybody who would like to talk with me individually about, you know, one of those specific things, I'd be glad to do that. But if there are sort of general comments overall that you might have or questions, I'd welcome those. Yeah. Yeah, excellent question. So we have, and there would be a several-part answer to that, okay? So our charitable investments are always invested using our stewardship investing philosophy. And so in doing that, we're investing it in ways that the folks that we work with can feel good about in terms of their client, in terms of their values and so forth. So, and I'll come back to that in a moment. We have a number of folks on staff who that's their job, is doing the investing behind this. And you can choose a number of different investment profiles, if you will, ranging from a fairly conservative profile to a more aggressive profile. And some of the different products will give you the options to choose within those. In terms of the stewardship investing philosophy, there's three really key parts to that for us, so that when we're investing money on your behalf, and this can either be the money that we're investing in IRAs and stuff, but also these charitable products, you know, when there's an investment possibility behind them, we take screening very seriously, and by that it's both negative screening. These are the places that we want to stay away from. You know, we don't want to invest in tobacco, pornography, gambling, et cetera. You know, the different sin industries, as they're sometimes jokingly referred to. We also take seriously the responsibility to invest wisely in the kinds of companies and organizations that are doing good in our work, in our world, you know, that are providing positive social values there. So we do that part. A second part that's really significant for us is that we do advocacy work. And so when we own part of a company, we try to take our role as owners seriously and make a difference in what in how those companies are run. So when you see out at the table out there, whenever you see the chocolate there, I always bring Dove candy because you see a little logo on it that identifies that they that this is Rainforest certified chocolate. A number of years ago, Everence and organizations like us went to Hershey and said, we don't think it's appropriate that you are getting your cocoa from places that are using child slave labor. And in conversation with them, we got them to commit that by the year 2020, they will get all of their cocoa from places that are not using child slave labor, right? Interestingly, I've been bringing Dove chocolate for a long time. And I was doing an appreciation event, and one of the people came up to me and said, I sell chocolate. I mean, it's part of her job, and this is actually a Mars product, not a Hershey product. And Hershey was who we had worked with. But that's sort of an example that because Hershey's the leader, we work with Hershey, it kind of pushes the others to do that, you know, to follow suit with them, right? So, long answer, perhaps, from what you were looking for, but hopefully that covered, yeah. Right. It will depend on the type of product in the way that you have gifted it. Okay. In some of the cases, you have a lot of input into making recommendations. The gift annuity one, for example, that's one where you don't, because it's just kind of it's managed as part of our large gift annuity pool, and part of that is because. They're regulated in such a way that we need to make sure that we have a big enough reserves pool, and we just have a little less freedom in how that is invested. The other kinds of things, we describe it as saying that you're able to make recommendations to us. And what's important about that is saying that when you've made a gift, for example, to the Everence Foundation, you've made a gift, right? So you have to give up control. Now, there's... So you can make recommendations to us. The reality is there's no reason in the world for us not to follow your recommendations, because if we don't follow your recommendations, you know, you're going to tell your friends and nobody else is going to want to use us, right? So, you know, we take those recommendations very seriously. And it's the same way when it comes to, you know, saying that you recommend to us distributions of these charities that we want to support, right? Because these are, you know, that's not a legally binding recommendation on your part. But, like I said, there's no reason for us not to follow that recommendation. Now, those were talking about the charitable kinds of things. Obviously, you know, we're not really talking about the investment things. Those you have, you know, I mean, you clearly have direction on that, because that's your money, right, that we're working with you on. Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so, for example, one of the things that we do periodically is have Friends Development Fund complete what we call an asset allocation questionnaire, and that helps us identify whether you're wanting to invest it, you know, very conservatively, very, you know, very aggressively. And Friends Development Fund is invested in the model that we refer to as moderate conservative, and that's by far the most common investment profile for the nonprofit organizations that we work with and that we manage money on behalf of. Yeah.
Lyle, this afternoon you're probably going to talk a little bit in the stewardship board about cultivating generous congregations.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. One of the things that we have done over the years, I mean, in all of the kinds, we're always doing education, providing support for congregations in different ways. A few years ago, we partnered with the Lake Institute, which is the religious component of the Indiana University School of Philanthropy, which is really one of the biggest names in terms of understanding philanthropy. And so we've partnered with them to develop a curriculum that really focuses on generosity as a spiritual practice in our congregations. Okay, the reality is, a quote that I came across one time said, you know, that money without a mission is hopeless, right? I mean, if we've got money in our congregations but really don't have a mission for it, it's like, well, what's the big deal, right? The flip side of that is that a mission without money can be helpless. And so if we have a great mission but don't have the resources for it, it's hard to do that. So this workshop is can be presented in a couple of – we developed a particular workshop called Cultivating Generous Congregations, and it can be structured in a couple of different ways, either as a one-day thing, a two-day thing, even a three-day thing, or sometimes as a one-day plus a follow-up webinar kinds of things. And we work through a number of different segments. I sometimes like to describe it as kind of having three primary focus points. One is that it helps us think about developing a theology of money and a theology of giving, etc. A second component is looking at some of the sociological research that is there that helps us think about helps us understand that there are generational differences in how we think about giving. You know, folks my age and older tend to be more loyal towards giving to institutions. Folks who are younger tend to be less loyal to giving to institutions. They are more interested in giving to specific projects and opportunities, etc. A third piece then is helping folks as congregational leaders understand what are some of the tools that are there for encouraging generosity. You know, how do we talk with those over the age of 70 in our congregation and make sure they're aware of these qualified charitable distributions? How do we talk about other aspects of generosity in our congregation? These workshops are designed to have a team of anywhere from 3 to 6 or 7 people from a congregation. We invite 3 or 4 congregations to come together. We sort of see our minimum as having 4 congregations and 20 people or so. But we can do it with as large a group as, 40, 50 people there and, 7 or 8 congregations. So one of the things that we would be very interested in exploring is whether there might be within Iowa Yearly Meeting a sort of critical mass, if you will, of congregations that would say, yeah, we'd like to take part in a workshop like this. One of the particular things that's interesting, I think, for Quaker congregations is we have 2 people who are our presenters as Everence. One of them is a name that may be familiar to a lot of you, and that's Colin Saxton. He's become a part of Everence for a little over a year ago now. He was formerly the director, what was his title, Executive Secretary of Friends United Meeting. And one of the real advantages for that is the realization that he can kind of give a, this is something that we do for all the different denominations and faith groups that we work with, but he's able to give a particularly Quaker bent to it, and understands the context in a way that is a little different, frankly, than when we do it in, the Church of the Brethren or some of the other groups that we work with. And so that's actually something that would be a real advantage. And so we have him do the presentation whenever we're working primarily with Quaker groups. Yeah. And again, I would be glad to talk with anybody individually on that. I've talked with Tom about perhaps some evening, one of the times when we do the second Sunday at 6 webinar things is, maybe joining and presenting for pastors in that setting as well. When I talk about having a team together, we always want to, whenever possible, have the lead pastor be a part of that team because, again, we're focusing this on generosity as a spiritual practice. And if we as pastors are, responsible for guiding the spiritual life of our congregation, it makes sense for pastors to be involved in this particular conversation. The idea then is to then develop sort of a working plan for stewardship in the life of your congregation, that is unique and fits your particular congregation. You won't come out of it with sort of a, 7-step guide to turning around your congregation's financial life. That's not it's not a protocol that you're going to follow these steps and you'll never have any financial challenges again. It's really about understanding what's unique to your culture and how, what's the way to best work at this in your congregation. So there's a fair amount of group time built into the workshop. We're called a fraternal benefits organization.
Okay.
Yeah.
So basically that means that they take their profits there and use those profits to support ministry to the congregations that they're part of. And that's basically how Lyle's salary is paid. His job is not to sell anything.
Right.
It's to minister to congregations, to individuals, to share about stewardship, about how we handle money, all those kinds of things. So, one of the benefits that we have. So I think while maybe we're...
Yeah.